This week on Vanderbilt Internal Medicine Podcast, the Q-Files with Peter Thorne.
Today we're going to be talking about the Fidelio trial.
But no one had looked at aldosterone as the second target.
If finerenone would delay the progression of diabetic nephropathy, the observed benefit of finerenone was demonstrated in spite of being on maximal ACE or ARB, which supports that finerenone has additional renal protective effects.
Will this study change your current practice?
This podcast is made by and for our internal medicine residents to enhance our educational experience. The content, while edited by residents, is not verified by host speakers, and we are not content experts on these topics. The content provided by this podcast is not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. It should not be used to diagnose or treat any medical condition. We attempt to avoid use of opinion, but all opinions are our own and not representative of University Medical Center. Please keep this in mind as you enjoy our podcast.
Welcome
to the Vanderbilt Internal Medicine Podcast.
Welcome back to Vanderbilt Internal Medicine Podcast. We have Peter Thorne here with us today. He is actually a friend of the pod. You might recognize him.
Yeah, that's right. He did the Prodesky trial with us last year, and he just decided to come back for a little bit more fun. Welcome back to the podcast, Peter.
Perfect. Thanks for having me again, guys. I'm excited to go through the Fidelio trial with you.
I was trying to describe you earlier, and I think I called you a Wisconsinan. And I'm learning it's now Wisconsinite.
Yep. I grew up in Wisconsin, went to med school in Milwaukee, did my residency here, and now I'm one of the first-year nephrology fellows here.
And I understand you're going to teach us a little bit more about how to prevent the progression of diabetic nephropathy.
That's right. So the Fidelio trial is what we're going to go through today. It's looking at finerenone, which is a mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, in addition to standard of care for our diabetic nephropathy folks. Really great trial.
Peter, I've never heard of the drug finerenone, but it sounds sort of like a plerenone. Can you tell us what finerenone is?
Yeah, so there's a reason you guys haven't heard of it. It's because we can't prescribe it here. It's not available in the U.S. yet. If you're over in Japan, I think that they have like two or three of these non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists that are actually available. But over in the U.S., we're stuck with just spironolactone and plerenone, the agents that you guys are recognizing. And so it's nice that they made the end of the names similar so we can get an idea of what class it's in. And then, as I mentioned already, finerenone is a non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, which essentially is a fancy way of saying they changed it up a little bit, has some different specificity for the receptor. And at the end of the day, we're hoping we still get the benefits of a mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist with a little bit less of the downsides, especially hyperkalemia. Ultimately, I would think that in the year 2021, we're probably going to be seeing this guy become available. We're going to run into the same issues as we do with any new agent. It's probably going to be exuberantly expensive, and we can't get it for any of our patients. But I wouldn't be surprised if you start hearing more about this as the year progresses.
So tell us a little bit more about what we're aiming to do in this trial.
Diabetes is one of our major causes of CKD worldwide. You guys know that. You see it in your primary care clinics every day when your folks have had poorly controlled diabetes and you see their creatinine slowly trend up and the proteinuria slowly trend up over time, and eventually you consult them over to us. So guideline-directed therapy, as we know from our role as primary care docs or as the nephrology consultant, is to make sure that we're maximizing blood pressure control, control of hyperglycemia, and then, of course, advocating for our patients to do the right lifestyle things. Stop smoking, lose some weight, get the right amount of exercise. All that kind of stuff that comes standard and it's all secondhand to us. We really want to be thinking about what kind of medications am I going to add on to help prevent the progression or slow down the progression, I should say, of their underlying disease. Again, at the tip of your tongue should be ACE inhibitors and ARBs. These form the backbone of blood pressure control in diabetic patients for a very good reason. There's a number of studies that have shown that they not only reduce proteinuria, but they slow the progression of diabetic nephropathy. And they do it via mechanisms that are outside of just the blood pressure control that they add on in folks. So we're getting two or three for one out of a medication, which is awesome.
And shout out to David Lee for his Credence trial with SGLT2 inhibitors.
That's a very good reminder. And as we're thinking about treating these patients, we want those agents to also be on the tip of our tongue. So I think a good second thing to review as we're kind of working through this is just the importance of the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system and why we're focusing on agents that are targeting that and where our targets are that are available. So you guys should all know that upstream we have renin, which is released from cells in the afferent arteriole. There's a number of stimuli that promote this, but the important ones to remember are low blood pressure, adrenergic stimulation, and decreased sodium delivery to the distal tubule. You guys remember that's kind of where the juxtaglomerular apparatus is hanging out and trying to get an idea of how much sodium is arriving there. And this plays a big role in our renin release. Renin then causes angiotensinogen to be converted to angiotensin 1, which then gets converted to angiotensin 2 via angiotensin converting enzyme. Angiotensin 2 increases blood pressure control and contributes to the release of aldosterone. And then aldosterone interacts with the intracellular mineralocorticoid receptor, which is found in a number of tissues. But for our purposes, we really want to think about it in the principal cells of the collecting ducts of the kidney. And at the end of the day, it's going to result in an increased sodium reabsorption and K excretion.
What's the proposed benefit of trying to block RAS in multiple places?
We know that blocking the RAS system in one spot is delaying progression of disease. It's reducing proteinuria. By that logic, we'd say, well, maybe if I can block multiple spots, I can delay progression even more, and I can reduce proteinuria even more. That leads to another question of why the heck do we care about reducing proteinuria so much? Well, I would say that one touchstone or cornerstone of our thought process for these patients should be that the reduction of proteinuria correlates with the slowed progression of diabetic nephropathy. So the farther down you can get their proteinuria, the slower their kidney disease is going to progress. And the other important component is that many of our patients, and I'm sure you guys have seen this in your clinic cohorts, even when you have them on maximum ACE or ARB that they're able to tolerate, they still have persistent proteinuria. So being able to target another spot in that pathway and hopefully bringing proteinuria down further should, by the logic that we've laid out, hopefully slow progression of their underlying disease.
So I'm sure that means that there's already been some trials looking at dual RAS blockade. Tell us a little bit more about some of the studies that have been done prior to Fidelio that we know about.
I think there's a few important studies I'd want to point out that guide the thought process behind why would we be looking at ACE inhibitors and ARBs and then adding on a mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist. Why don't we add on X or Y instead? And one of those studies would be the VA NEFRON-D trial from 2013. It's another relatively big randomized controlled trial that looked at diabetic patients with proteinuria. They were on losartan and had lisinopril or placebo added on. The trial was actually discontinued early after a median follow-up of 2.2 years because of safety concerns. Turns out the combination therapy group had a higher rate of AKI and severe hyperkalemia, and similar rates of their primary composite endpoint of 50% EGFR decline, ESRD, or death. So certainly not the results we wanted to see from that trial. I think another important trial to point out would be the ALTITUDE trial. This is a randomized controlled trial in 2012 that looked at about 8,500 patients, again with diabetes and proteinuria. These patients were on an ACE or an ARB and had eliscrin, a direct renin inhibitor, added at maximally tolerated dose or placebo. And the eliscrin group had significantly more adverse events, and the primary outcome occurred more often than the treatment group again. So these are two big, well-done trials that pointed out that blocking our renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system in two separate spots using two separate medications actually made our patients do worse.
But no one had looked at the aldosterone as the second target.
Up to this date, we have small or underpowered trials that have looked at the addition of a MRA to an ACE or an ARB, and we know that it reduces albuminuria or proteinuria, but that it also increases the risk of hyperkalemia. In addition, the studies to date were unable to evaluate hard renal endpoints like those that I mentioned before, the 50% EGFR decline, kidney failure, ESRD, death, etc. These things that would really show or prove to us that the addition of this extra medication and the risk of like hyperkalemia were worth it in improving outcomes for these folks. This is one of the reasons that they wanted to design and go through with the Fidelio trial, to have a large randomized controlled trial that would hopefully be able to demonstrate these hard renal endpoints.
Specifically in the Fidelio trial, what was their clinical question?
So these investigators wanted to know if finerenone, in addition to standard of care, would delay the progression of diabetic nephropathy when compared to ACE inhibitor or ARB plus placebo.
Tell us how the trial was designed.
This was a phase 3 randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled, multi-center clinical trial. So they kind of checked all the boxes
there. Yeah, that has all the good words in there.
Yeah. These are the things, even if your brain is completely off, if you hear them just say all those, you're like, this is going to be a good trial. So they took 5,700 patients. They were all adults, and they had a history of CKD and diabetes plus albuminuria. They had some cutoffs for the amount of albuminuria and the corresponding GFR. So for instance, one group had 30 to 300 milligrams per gram of urine albumin creatinine ratio and an eGFR of 25 to 60 and diabetic retinopathy. Or the other group had worse albuminuria with 300 to less than 5,000 and an eGFR range of 25 to 75. There were a lot of exclusion criteria for this trial because they wanted to really hone in to a high-risk diabetic nephropathy cohort at really high risk of progression. Exclusion criteria included non-diabetic kidney disease, really poorly controlled diabetes with an A1C greater than 12, really poorly controlled hypertension with a systolic blood pressure greater than 170, underlying heart failure with reduced ejection fraction that already gave them a class 1A recommendation for an MRA. They had a history of stroke, TIA, ACS, or recent AKI that was dialysis dependent. And then lastly, hepatic insufficiency or Addison's disease were also exclusion criteria for these folks.
It seems like they really included a lot of patients who we would see in clinic. They didn't have very strict guidelines for A1C, right? Less than 12. The systolic blood pressure had to be less than 170. Those aren't very difficult to achieve in general.
Yeah, and at the same time, they're focusing on patients that already have some evidence of diabetic nephropathy. It sounds like they all have some degree of microalbuminuria, and their level kind of corresponds to their GFR.
Did they just start all these patients on finerenone and an ARB or ACE at the same time?
A lot of these folks were actually already on an ACE and an ARB before enrollment in the trial. But importantly, if they weren't, or even if they were, patients that were enrolled went into a run-in period that lasted 4 to 16 weeks. And this is actually really important for the design of the trial because that 4 to 16 weeks bought them time to maximize the dose that was tolerated of ACE or ARB, with the underlying idea being, hey, I want to add on an MRA, but I want to make sure that the folks in my trial are getting the maximum dosage that they can tolerate of what I already know is effective and guideline-directed therapy. And so they're trying to isolate the benefit that they're getting from the addition of finerenone or an MRA instead of just saying like, oh, well, maybe these folks had their ACE or ARB doses adjusted somewhere in the trial, and maybe that made a big difference in their outcomes.
So how many patients ended up being included in the trial, Peter?
Yeah, so there were about 5,700, so about 2,800 or so in each group that were randomized to receive finerenone, either 10 or 20 milligrams, depending on their eGFR at the time of randomization. And they were subsequently up-titrated or down-titrated, depending on how they did during the trial, or placebo 10 milligrams or 20 milligrams as well. Patients were followed at 1 month, 4 months, and 4 months, and every 4 months thereafter until the trial end.
What were the primary endpoints?
So they were looking at a composite of kidney failure, sustained decrease of at least 40% in eGFR from baseline, or death from renal causes as their primary composite endpoint. They also had some key secondary outcomes that they wanted to evaluate. So a composite of death from cardiovascular causes, non-fatal myocardial infarction, non-fatal stroke, or hospitalization from heart failure. And in addition, they had a few other secondary outcomes, such as death from any cause, hospitalization from any cause, change in urine albumin creatinine ratio from baseline to month 4, and then a composite of kidney failure, sustained decrease of at least 57% in the eGFR from baseline, and death from renal causes.
Our primary endpoint is a composite outcome. So that means that any of these three things happening means that they've reached the endpoint. So either they have kidney failure, they have a sustained decrease of GFR of at least 40%, or they die from a renal cause. Any one of those three means that they've hit the composite endpoint.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So there's a key secondary outcome of a composite cardiovascular outcome. So pretty much cardiovascular death, heart attack, stroke, or hospitalization of heart failure.
And one way to kind of rationalize that in your mind is to think, well, If I'm making kidneys work better over time, I should probably be making their hearts work better over time. Because as you guys know, as kidneys fail, hearts usually go with it, especially from atherosclerotic disease, et cetera.
I see here in your notes you're talking about this being an event-driven trial. Can you explain to us what an event-driven trial is?
They were looking for these composite kidney failure events to occur. They needed a certain number of these events to happen in their group that they recruited. Hence why when we went through the inclusion and exclusion criteria, we essentially were describing a group that was at very high risk of progression of their diabetic nephropathy and these outcomes happening. And they calculated that they needed a little bit over 1,000 of these events to get to 90% power to detect a 20% lower risk of the primary outcome event in the treatment group compared with the placebo group. This trial went on for a little bit over 2.5 years.
So in 2.5 years, you had to have over 1,000 of these patients have either kidney failure, decrease in at least 40% in their GFR, or death.
Yeah. Wow. And if we look at the actual numbers for the primary composite outcome, we'll see that 504 patients in the finerenone group, which is 17.8%, versus 600 patients in the placebo group, which is 21.1%, had that primary composite outcome. And this hazard ratio turned out to be 0.82 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.73 to 0.93.
So you're saying there's about a 20% risk reduction of the composite primary composite outcome in those treated with finerenone?
Yeah, that's what the hazard ratio is showing us, which is a pretty good result.
What about some of the secondary composite outcomes that you mentioned?
Yeah, so it looked good when we're reviewing the secondary composite outcomes, which are essentially our cardiac outcomes. It just made statistical significance with a confidence interval of 0.75 to 0.99, but it has a p-value of 0.01. And in addition, the secondary composite kidney outcomes of kidney failure, a sustained decrease of at least 57% in the eGFR from baseline, which is essentially equivalent to a doubling of the serum creatinine level, or death from renal causes looked great with a hazard ratio of 0.76. But there's an important caveat for those results in that they're only exploratory.
Peter, what's an exploratory finding?
So in essence, it's an exploratory finding because in a hierarchical testing plan, if you don't tick the boxes of outcomes higher up in the hierarchy, you can't just take credit for what's lower down. These investigators put death from any cause higher up in the hierarchical testing plan than they did secondary composite kidney outcomes. And because death from any cause was not statistically significant, even though the numbers look great for secondary composite kidney outcomes, you can't actually draw a finding from that. And you have to just say, numbers looked good here, but it's just exploratory.
But, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, our primary composite outcome really is a promising finding, and then our first secondary composite outcome of the cardiovascular death and comorbidities is also just sneaking by statistical significance. So there are still some positive results to talk about, right?
Alex, you're exactly right. We can still draw conclusions from the primary composite outcome and the cardiac outcomes, and we just have to be careful about how we interpret some of these secondary outcomes that are farther down on the hierarchical testing plan.
Earlier, we talked about the importance of reducing proteinuria. Did finerenone actually help?
So we found that finerenone was associated with a 31% greater reduction in the urine albumin to creatinine ratio from baseline to month 4, and that lower ratio was maintained thereafter.
Were there any adverse events in the finerenone arm?
So the biggest things that we wanted to keep track of, especially when we were taking into account the other dual RAS blockade studies that have been done, are whether the finerenone group was going to have a higher risk of acute kidney injury and whether they were going to have a higher risk of hyperkalemia. The finerenone group did have more hyperkalemia with 18.3% versus 9%, but the incidence of AKI was essentially the same in both groups, with 4.6% in the finerenone group and 4.8% in the placebo group. We know that adding on a mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, even if we're putting in this non-steroidal group, are going to have a higher risk of hyperkalemia. I think it's important to note that only about 2.3% of folks in the finerenone group had to withdraw because of hyperkalemia, which is a lot lower than some of the other studies of dual RAS blockade.
They had a protocol in place for dose reduction or for holding doses of study drug or placebo for patients that were hyperkalemic. But I think now would be an important time to point out that patients that were enrolled had to have a potassium of less than 4.8. This will just be important for us to remember when we're trying to extrapolate the results of this study to our primary care population. It's not every bad diabetic nephropathy patient that comes in that's going to have a K of less than 4.8. And we need to be really mindful of hyperkalemia in these folks, even though this medication is touted as having less hyperkalemia than, say, spironolactone or eplerenone.
What were some of the limitations of the trial?
This trial excluded patients with non-albuminuric CKD, excluded patients with CKD not due to diabetes. It had a very small number of African-American patients, and patients, as we already mentioned, were only allowed to enroll if their baseline potassium was less than 4.8. To summarize, patients with CKD and diabetes type 2 who received finerenone had a lower risk of a primary outcome event than placebo in this trial. This suggests that finerenone may be an effective treatment for kidney and cardiovascular protection based on the primary and key secondary outcomes evaluated in the study. Importantly, patients were on guideline-directed therapy with an ACE inhibitor or an ARB, and because of a long run-in period, were able to be titrated to the maximally tolerated dose prior to starting finerenone. The observed benefit of finerenone was demonstrated in spite of being on maximal ACE or ARB, which supports the thought that finerenone has additional renal protective effects.
So let's say I have a patient in clinic who diagnosed diabetes and detected microalbuminuria. We've up-titrated his ACE inhibitor or ARB to goal. Would your next step at this point be finerenone now that we have this data, or would it be an SGLT2?
I think right now my first step would probably be to reach for the SGLT2 inhibitors. The answer is made a little bit easier that we can't get our hands on finerenone here right now. It brings up a good point that I don't have good comparative data of which cadence to add these agents on to one another. Right now I know that ACE or ARB plus SGLT2 inhibitor in this patient population is better than ACE or ARB alone. And this study suggests to me ACE or ARB plus MRA is better than ACE or ARB alone. Only 10% of the folks in this study were on ACE or ARB plus an SGLT2 inhibitor plus an MRA. And so those studies and that specific patient group will have to be looked at closer going forward. But if we're trying to extrapolate the results of the Credence or DAPA-CKD trial, it seems to me that it's safe to at least assume that having all three is going to be better than having two, or that perhaps it'll be very specific folks that maybe can't tolerate an SGLT2 inhibitor that I instead reach for an MRA in those folks, or can't tolerate an MRA and I put them on an SGLT2 inhibitor instead. I think time will tell what our practice ultimately turns out to be. But the idea of having multiple agents to reach for in this patient population that desperately needs more medication to slow the progression of their disease leaves us in a lot better spot than where we were before.
What about the difference between finerenone and the agents that we have right now? Like, do you feel comfortable extrapolating this data to spironolactone?
Right now, I would say that if I was comparing, these trials are trying to use this as a reason to add on spironolactone to one of my patients, I would have to have them be very selectively picked just because of the much higher risk of hyperkalemia with spironolactone. And one thing that we didn't really mention, but that's really important to keep in mind, is that spironolactone has a lot more blood pressure effect than finerenone does. The folks in this current study had very little reduction in their systolic blood pressure with the addition of finerenone, whereas I'm sure you guys have seen in your clinical practice that when you add on spironolactone, some of these people can really drop their blood pressure, and we can end up getting ourselves into trouble in a couple different ways. So I'd be very hesitant to use the data in this study to say, oh, I got to get all my patients on spironolactone.
Peter, I think you probably already addressed this, but will this study change your current practice?
It's kind of a tough answer, actually, because I can't get my hands on the medication that we're talking about. I think that going forward, again, it's going to give us another option for selected patients with kidney disease, diabetes, and albuminuria that's going to allow us to hopefully slow the progression of their disease.
Yeah, Peter, I appreciate you bringing this trial. And this is really interesting data that we're thinking about all these different ways to slow down the progression of diabetic nephropathy. And I also just want to caution any listener that's listening to this. This is for finerenone. It's a much safer drug, it sounds like, than spironolactone. And we have to be really careful about this and really rely on our nephrologists to kind of help us guide this practice as it becomes available in America. But it's a really exciting avenue. And thank you for teaching us more about it.
Of course. Happy to help out, guys.
Thanks again, Peter. Really appreciate hearing from now a nephrology fellow about a nephrology article.
Thanks, guys.